We're featuring poets on this archive edition of Fresh Air. We have a 1988 interview with Sharon Olds. Poet Diane Wachowski said about Olds, "What makes me read and admire Olds' poems is an obsession which runs through every poem, destruction. There is not a single poem by Sharon Olds which does not intertwine destruction and creation." Olds won a 1985 National Book Critics Award for her collection The Dead and the Living. Her work has been published in The New Yorker, The Atlantic, The Nation, and The New Republic. She's a professor of creative writing at NYU. Our interview starts with a poem about a suicide she witnessed unfold across the street from her apartment. As she watched from her window, she hid behind the corner of the shutter, fearing the man might have a gun and she could get hit by a wild bullet. The scene was especially vivid because she had just returned to New York from the ocean.
Summer solstice, New York City. By the end of the longest day of the year, he could not stand it. He went up the iron stairs through the roof of the building and over the soft, tarry surface to the edge, put one leg over the complex green tin cornice, and said if they came a step closer, that was it. Then the huge machinery of the earth began to work for his life. The cops came in their suits blue-gray as the sky on a cloudy evening, and one put on a bulletproof vest, a black shell around his own life, life of his children's father, in case the man was armed. And one, slung with a rope like the sign of his bounden duty, came up out of a hole in the top of the neighboring building, like the gold hole they say is in the top of the head, and began to lurk toward the man who wanted to die. The tallest cop approached him directly, softly, slowly, talking to him, talking, talking, while the man's leg hung over the lip of the next world, and the crowd gathered in the street, silent, and the hairy net with its implacable grid was unfolded near the curb and spread out and stretched as the sheet is prepared to receive at a birth. Then they all came a little closer, where he squatted next to his death, his shirt glowing its milky glow like something growing in a dish at night in the dark in a lab, and then everything stopped as his body jerked, and he stepped down from the parapet and went toward them, and they closed on him. I thought they were going to beat him up, as a mother whose child has been lost will scream at the child when it's found. They took him by the arms and held him up and leaned him against the wall of the chimney, and the tall cop lit a cigarette in his own mouth and gave it to him. And then they all lit cigarettes, and the red glowing ends burned like the tiny campfires we lit at night back at the beginning of the world.
I think that poem really gets a sense of how everyone feels very threatened by a suicide. Not threatened by the possibility of a stray shot headed toward them, but the fact that someone would want to take their life is a kind of threat to everybody else.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
To everybody else's equilibrium and sense of well-being.
Yes, I was talking to a class at NYU a while ago about endings of poems, and we all discovered together while working in the class that sometimes I would feel a poem didn't work at the end, but it was because I wanted a happy ending on the poem. And we decided to call me a salvation addict. So now that I read this to you, I hear, yes, it's definitely a poem of a salvation addict whose addiction is, whose craving is being satisfied for once by the event there on 97th Street.
This poem that you just read is about something that you witnessed that obviously had a powerful effect on you.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of your poems are very personal, about your life, your upbringing, your parents, your children, your husband, your first lover, your best girlfriend who died when she was nine. They're very, very personal poems. And in a way, I think some of those poems are the kinds of thoughts you'd write in a diary that had a lock on it, and you'd keep that diary locked so no one else could see it.
Mm-hmm.
Did that ever bother you when you started writing poems, that you'd be writing a poem about your parents and they'd find it?
Well, what I look at in these poems, the way I look at any poems that I read or poems of young poets that I'm working with, they are poems as if to the parents of the speaker. But I would never talk about them as poems about my parents, my husband, my children. I keep my private life very separate in my mind and in public. from my life as a writer. So to me, there it's a speaker talking about parents. To me, that, and say I read someone else's poem and it's as if to their own parent, does it matter to me if it was really to their own parent? No. What matters to me in their poem is if I feel that I'm present at a human experience that's being described in a way that feels real or useful or moving or visualizable to me. So that's a somewhat different take on the question.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, with that said, would you read a poem for us called I Go Back to May, 1937?
Sure. I go back to May, 1937. I see them standing at the formal gates of their colleges. I see my father strolling out under the ochre sandstone arch, the red tiles glinting like bent plates of blood behind his head. I see my mother with a few light books at her hip, standing at the pillar made of tiny bricks, with the wrought iron gate still open behind her, its sword tips black in the May air. They are about to graduate. They are about to get married. They are kids. They are dumb. All they know is they are innocent. They would never hurt anybody. I want to go up to them and say, stop. Don't do it. She's the wrong woman. He's the wrong man. You are going to do things you cannot imagine you would ever do. You are going to do bad things to children. You are going to suffer in ways you never heard of. You are going to want to die. I want to go up to them there in the late May sunlight and say it. Her hungry, pretty, blank face turning to me. Her pitiful, beautiful, untouched body. His arrogant, handsome face turning to me. His pitiful, beautiful, untouched body. But I don't do it. I want to live. I take them up like the male and female paper dolls and bang them together at the hips like chips of flint as if to strike sparks from them. I say, do what you are going to do, and I will tell about it.
So is that poem about your parents, or do you prefer to think of it as a poem about somebody's parents, just a poem about parents but not necessarily yours?
Yes, it's similar with my own work as with work of others that I look at. The important thing to me for any of us is, I mean, you know, no one reads poetry. Almost no one reads it.
Right.
Everyone, almost, who hasn't written a poem at some time in their life, most people have written something. That need to speak is familiar to us all. But to read it, no. I don't know why, really. But if one were to be able to need to write poems that happen to seem as if they were by anybody or for anybody, or whose desire to share experience was such that the biographical side of it wasn't so interesting to readers as just the truth of it, or the apparent truth, or just if it felt like anybody, like a real person.
I'm trying to figure out if this poem and the other very personal poems like it are really very personal to you, but you'd rather just not talk about the personal experiences that they came from.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Could I ask you a question?
Sure.
Could you talk a little about that desire of yours, about where it comes from or what the meaning of that is? Why want to know as a reader?
Well, I think that's a really interesting question. And when I was reading your poems last night and thinking about what we were going to talk about in the interview, I was thinking, well, really, what makes Sharon Olds interesting to me? Do I really care what her parents were like, or do I really care that she writes good poetry? Mm-hmm. And I said, well, I really care that she writes good poetry. But then I said, but I'm also interested in the parts of her life that inspired the poems that she writes about, and how those experiences helped her become the poet she is today.
I've gone through a whole history of thinking and feeling about all of this. You know, this is at the end of, I've just given my fourth book to my editor. So when I first started out, I didn't know what I thought about all of this. So if you had asked me this question 10 years ago, I would have probably given a very different answer. But I've come to not worry about these questions or be interested in them in the same way. And also for writers that I'm working with, if they're writing about something merely because it's true or because they have a strong feeling about it, you know, as a poem, it's not necessarily going to work. It has to jump the fence somehow, just, or knock it down, and the poem has to be free to lead its own life.
Mm-hmm. So you don't like talking about your own life, but just the life of the poems?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. Now, here's one thing I would wonder. One of the emotions that you expressed in the poem that you just read is the sense of, like, knowing that these two people who will become your parents are not fated to love each other for very long, and you'd really like to go back and make them stop that relationship, but it would mean that you would not be born. I think this is probably an emotion that a lot of people have had, and that probably a lot of people have tried to control. Do you know, there's a lot of thoughts that come to your mind, and you think, I shouldn't be thinking this. This is really bad to think.
Yeah.
I think what a poet would do would be to confront the thought and write a poem about it, as opposed to trying to repress the thought.
Yes, that must be one of the uses of poetry in our time, besides the singing of language itself without melody. It seems to me both of those impulses are probably equally strong in the poems that I read that I like the most. It's hard to know what the function of poetry is in our society. I mean, sometimes one feels it's so tiny. But I think you're right, that desire to say what hasn't been said, to have, to make an object or a little being on the page, like the poem, you know, the way it sits there with its body on the page, to give that less often mentioned thought or feeling from inside the person. I like your idea. That rings a bell for me.
Poet Sharon Olds, recorded in 1988. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.